on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Orient Hour. I'm Andy Gilson in the Brentwood Studios, joined this evening by Christian Wheeler. Good evening, Chris. How are you?
Good evening. Good, thank you very much.
Good. And also, just to his right, as I look, is Jamie Stripe. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Andy. Good evening, everybody.
Yeah, just come a little bit closer to the mic, please.
I'm right there now.
Yeah, right. We can hear you a bit better. Anyway, an eventful last week since we've been in the studio, isn't it? We interviewed Barry Hearn last Wednesday, and then, of course, on Friday morning, the confirmation that Kenny Jackett is the new Orient manager. And was that a surprise, Christian, or was it something you expected?
It was a nice surprise. I think his name had been touted about. I think I originally said I didn't know whether we'd be able to get someone like Kenny Jackett in the building. Very glad we have. I think there's a sort of glowing swell of excitement between the...
Could have been a smell as well.
Yeah, well, this hopefully doesn't stink the place out, but yeah, a growing smell, swell of sort of excitement amongst the supporters. And I think it's a real statement of intent from the football club.
Yeah, I think that's the words, I think, that were ringing in most people's minds, that it was a statement of intent, Jamie, and the like of which, on my experience at Orient anyway, I've never seen anything like it. For 40 years, I've not seen that standard of manager coming in.
No, I thoroughly agree with you. I mean, me and you go back a long way. I mean, for someone like Kenny Jackett coming in, I mean, you can see how the reaction on social media has been. The place is absolutely buzzing at the moment. You know, if you're an Orient fan, I'm sure you're rushing to renew your season ticket very quickly.
Definitely. I think for the junction that we're at with the players out of contract and I'd say the COVID, the way COVID hits the last couple of seasons and results, everything else, I think we was at a perfect juncture for someone to come in, someone like Kenny Jackett, to reinvigorise the building, the supporters, put his stamp on the team. And I said, it's a perfect opportunity for the club to really kick on, and I think someone of his stature will enhance that. It should definitely be something for the players that, you know, are sitting on or stalling on contracts to think, actually, you know, I want to stay in the building. And, you know, for players that he's trying to get in, as I say, for me, you know, those words, statement of intent, should ring true, and there should be players there in Division 1 and Division 2 thinking that, you know, Leyton Orient would be a great place to go and play football next season.
Yeah, I thoroughly agree with that. And, you know, like you said, Christian, you know, with players sort of stalling on contracts, it might focus minds a little bit. If I was someone like Lawrence Figueroa, who was like maybe sitting on the fence for about signing on, I think, well, you know what, we've got a League One manager now and we can actually start going places, so it might be worth getting on board with the project.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it's the statement of intent thing is vital in retaining players that you wanted to retain, but attracting, more importantly, the players you'd like to sign. And I think you get a big name manager with a track record of success, certainly at the level we're at and above. You know, you've got two or three choices to go to, because if you're a decent player, you will. As long as Orient can be in the ballpark money-wise, that managerial advantage surely will count. Christian, what do you think?
I think so. I think that a man of his stature, that when you look at his CV, he's had a lot of success getting out of the leagues. Obviously, he's managed across all leagues, but he's had some lower league success. And, you know, I think it was Matt Porter that said in his interview the other day that there's nothing that man doesn't know about football. And, you know, an appointment of that stature should really put people's mind at rest for next season about us having a go and whether we're going to, you know, continue to maybe coast along that we maybe have done the last couple of years. You know, obviously COVID affected that, and we've had some managerial, you know, changes that have affected our progress. But, you know, that should really give us a massive push for next season. And I'm really hoping that, you know, he's managed clubs in and around the London area as well. We should have a decent, you know, contacts and pool of players that he can, you know, tap up in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I look at it, that Kenny was part of that Watford side that, you know, started in Division 4, which is League 2 now, and yep, went all the way to the equivalent of the Premier League. You know, and they were, you know, a small club at the end of the day with a few thousand fans, and they ended up in the top flight. They made the cup final, of course, 84 was it?
84, and yeah, second in the league as well.
Yeah, and I mean, that's under Graham Taylor, but I think he would have learnt and seen things there of how you can take a club from the bottom to the very top, and there is obviously a system to doing that. And a stage-by-stage approach to that. And obviously you have to change staff as you go. But, you know, a lot of those players did actually stay for several seasons, you know, and made it all the way through. So, you know, it can be done.
Yeah, I mean, John Barnes came in, I think it's season 81-82, and he stayed till 1988 until he joined that great Liverpool side that all conquered that season and was a force up until about 1991. So, you know, they stayed a long time. And also had, like, players coming through, like, you know, Ross Jenkins was there when he was up towards the end of his career. But he was a useful addition alongside Luther Blissett. And also, you know, he sort of showed him the ropes as they were going along and making their way as a strong partnership that fired them to two successive promotions.
Yeah, you mentioned Luther there, of course, and we are due to be speaking to Luther via the phone in a few minutes' time. So when he rings in, we'll switch him on and we'll have a chat with Luther. Sorry, Christian.
Wasn't Kenny Jackett part of the Swansea success as well? Wasn't he early on involved with Swansea and their route through the leagues? And, you know,
Toshack too, I think.
The interesting thing I think will be about Kenny Jackett is that I think we will see a lot more what I call a lower league approach to football next season. For me, that's a good thing. I think you play to the level that you're at. I think there's times last year that, you know, there were some games where we played some lovely football and we created some decent chances. But as with everything, you have to play and approach things with the tools that you've got. I'm not always sure that the players that we had were as comfortable playing that passing style and that expansive style that we tried to play. And as I say, I think we've spoken about it previously in the past. You know, I think Justin had a very good mix of, you know, getting it forward, being combative, being, you know, on the front foot, being aggressive, and then being expansive in their half. And for me, I'm very much, you know, one of those that think that that's the way to play the lower levels. And, you know, my recurring theme over the last couple of years is that we've just been a bit of a soft touch, and we've played football sometimes in the wrong areas. And I think with Kenny Jackett, you won't see that. I think we'll be very much a front foot, you know, getting people's faces. And you know, if you looked at the playoff games this week, you know, Newport done that. You know, Forest Green got it forward. You know, I think the more successful teams do get it in and around the opposing half, and then, you know, if you want to play and be expansive from there, so be it. But I think we gave a lot of goals away last year playing in the wrong areas and sometimes being too expansive for the level and too expansive for the players that we've got.
Yeah, why play 30 passes when three will do? I mean, that's sometimes the case, isn't it?
Well, as supporters, you know, I think someone made the comment in our WhatsApp group this week, it might have been Barry Lakin, you know, most supporters are going to be happy regardless of how the results turn out. But if you're churning out 3 points every week, you know, you can't tell me that some of the games we saw under Justin were easy on the eye and you've come away saying that was a brilliant performance. But we got the job done. We were very hard to beat. We was a good, aggressive lower league team, and I think that's what we need to get back to.
So, Jamie, if you look at what we've retained as we know it at the moment, and where is the most important area of the pitch for Kenny to start with?
I think it's the midfield. We seem to be a bit ponderous there for much of last season. I agree with Christian. I think we need to be a bit more dynamic in people's faces. You can see why Craig Clay was sort of offered the deal, and I'm sure Martin Ling's counting the fingers on his hand where Craig's trying to bite it off. You know, but the thing about Craig is that he may not be the greatest passer of the ball, but you know, he will try and get in people's faces and have an engine for 90 minutes. But I think we might need two or three more like that, and maybe one who can actually open the defence up with a pass or a tricky dribble. But I think midfield's one of the places where we need to reinforce. But the good thing is we've got someone like Hector Kipriano in there as well, who's coming through. So I'm looking forward to seeing him, you know, hopefully blossom under Kenny Jackett. But yeah, I think looking at that squad, you'd see, you know, the midfield needs a definite boost. And also some of our wide players. I don't think we had enough real quality in wide positions to mix it up a little bit. I mean, Brophy was a good option for us, but I think we needed more in one, you know, direct attacker on the left-hand side. So there's plenty for Kenny to think about. Maybe not that much time to get people in at the moment, but hopefully, you know, we've got a long pre-season coming up, so
Christian, you know, it's not as bad as it was when Martin Ling had to come in and assemble side from scratch, but it's still a big ask, isn't it? Because there's so many players that have gone, and players who weren't, let's be fair, good enough, they've had to be released. So it's a massive ask, isn't it? Despite the fact that it's Kenny Jackett and he's got lots of ticks against him, is it too much? Are the fans now expecting too much from the off here? Because we've got to pretty much build a squad, haven't we? Or three quarters of one.
I think we have. There's obviously some foundations there, but the only way I'd counteract that is most clubs in our league next year are probably going to be in the same position. Obviously. Yeah, I think I made a point last time I was on. We made a big sort of song and dance about how it was great to have so many players in contract last year, and it was a positive because they were together. Obviously, it probably turned out that those players had probably been together too long, and we needed to reinvigorate that squad. So the positive of that is we've got more or less a blank canvas, rather than, you know, we've got some people in the building, but there's some big players or big positions that need to be filled. So the positive there is there's going to be a lot of people out of contract. There's going to be a lot of people jostling to get a deal. And then, really, without putting too much pressure on him, it will come down to Kenny Jackett and his backroom staff in pre-season to get them together as quick as possible and set out a way of playing and getting that honed down and bedded in as quickly as possible. I think, you know, without being disrespectful, a more, shall we say, front to back, back to front, you know, in people's faces, get it wide, get in the box, is easier to bed down than it is an expansive style. Because, as I say, a simple 4-4-2 of getting it wide, getting it in the box, getting it on the second ball is a bit easier pattern of play than asking three centre-halves to step in and play out and someone else to drop in holes. And so I think there's plenty of positives there, but as you say, there is going to be work for them to do, and it will come down to, you know, how much they've got in the budget, that how they spend that wisely, and as I say, the quicker they can get the team, you know, bedded down and playing to his shape, the better that'll be.
I mean, do you think 4-4-2 is the way we're going to be going after the fans were screaming for it last season? Do you think that's the most likely, Jamie?
Well, you're going to have to, like Christian says, you've got the players to play it. And I think you're right. I think if a 4-4-2 is, you know, what Kenny's preference is, I'm sure he knows where to look to get the players in that will play it for him. It's difficult. I'd like to see us sign a little bit more variety of players in case, you know, we need the plan B, because, you know, most times during the season you have to switch tactics. I think Justin Edinburgh did that halfway through the promotion season. We went to three at the back at one stage. So, yeah, I mean, whatever works for us and whatever works for Kenny, like I said, I'd like to see a bit of a mix of players coming in, a few more wide players, and a couple of full-backs, I think, as well, you know, can get up and down the pitch all day. And, you know, if we have to play three centre-halves and two overlapping full-backs, we can do that quite easily as playing 4-4-2.
So. I want a dog. I want a centre-midfield dog. I've been crying out for a real... I just look at the teams that are successful, and I look at, you know, Charlie Lee when he was fit for you know, in a spell where he was fit, and, you know, Stephen Dawson, and, you know, players of that ilk, and I just think lower league football, the recurring thing for me over the last few years is just we've been a little bit of a soft touch, and I'd love someone, you know, I think I chucked it out there the other night when the game was on, and I know he divides opinion, but for me, I'd have Abu Evans in my team all day long. You know, I watched that game the other night, and he's always around. He's, you know, he's putting tackles in. He's box to box. He scores goals. You know, I just think I'd love, you know, if we're going to go 4-4-2, I'd love to go and get a decent, real decent target man, and I'd love to get a doggy midfield. And I just think in the lower leagues, it gives you a basis to be a decent side at home and a combative side away from home, where sometimes you've got to maybe ride it out for a bit. And just at the moment, you know, I think I really like Craig Clay. I do really like him. I don't think he's the best footballer, but I like him purely and simply because he gives everything that he's got. I don't think he had the best back part of the season. I think people said he was maybe carrying a knock or he wasn't very well, but I don't think as well either that system suited him. I think, unfortunately, that the type of player he is, he's one of them players that I don't think you try and put any reins on. You know, there's times when, you know, he sat in a two or he sat in a one. I think people like Craig Kay are best to just go box to box and let him run around and just do what he does. But for me, as I say, I'd love... even if you go through the spine, you know, I think we said off air just before, I'd be very, very surprised if Vigouroux stays at the ones that are offered. I think he'd probably be the one at the top of the list. I say would get a move, you know, Div 1, maybe a backup goalie in the champ, I don't know. But for me, we need a strong, solid goalkeeper that can kick it well. I like a Josh Coulson in the National League that's, you know, maybe 6 or 7 years younger. I'd like a dog in midfield, and, you know, ideally, you know, I'd like her, because even if we look at the players that we've got, if we had a target man up top, you know, then, you know, Cam Rule, Soturio, you know, get fit in pre-season and have a real go and try and get in the team. And I think someone like him would appreciate playing with, you know, even a younger Matt Harrold, someone that's going to take up a couple of centre halves, that's going to take his knocks for him, but when the ball drops in the box, he's there to put in the back of the net.
I mean, you say Craig Clay, but my concern is you said you wanted a Rottweiler sort of person in the middle, and he was that person, wasn't he? I mean, you're looking for two to do the same job.
To be quite honest, I think that Craig Clay gets about the pitch, but Craig Clay to me still... And maybe just personally, Craig Kay to me is still quite a nice bloke. I want someone that, you know, everybody divides opinion purely and simply because he plays on the edge. Mm-hmm. You know, that might mean that he gets the odd yellow and red card by leaving it on someone or whatever, but I want someone in that centre of the park that galvanises us as a football team home and away. Sometimes that might just be a tackle in the fifth minute that gets the crowd going. I want someone in the centre of the park that gets around the pitch, gets in people's faces, and just, I just think in lower league football, a lot can be said by having a character like that. You know, we was talking online, I think it was Sunday when the game was going on. I've always been a big fan of Labadie. You know, he comes on for Newport, he scores, he gets around the pitch, he's in people's faces, he can play at the same time. But I just think, you know, I don't think Craig Clay in maybe a top three team plays every week. Yep. So maybe a better version than that, and a bit of a nastier version than that. But you know, there's been talk of Darren Pratley and Darren Pratley coming to the football club. Darren Pratley for me would be excellent. You know, I've seen him over the last couple of years for Charlton. I've been very impressed. Always seems to, you know, pop up with the odd goal, and he can play, he can mix it up. So you know, as I say, it all come down to his style of play and what he wants, but I can't see Kenny Jackett playing anything other than 4-4-2 myself.
Yeah, you're happy about that one, Jamie, 4-4-2?
Yeah, I'm happy about that. Like I said, you know, if we get enough of the players that can play it, I don't see it's much of a problem. All I'm worried about is that obviously at some point people will get wise to it, and we'll have to change it. We need enough in our squad to do that when the need arises, but I agree with Christian. I think we do kind of need to look at a target man as well. I don't know any good ones floating around that will be available, but like, if we want to get the best out of someone like Royal Soteria, maybe it's time to invest in one.
Yeah, well, we're hoping to hear from Luther Blissett. At the moment, the phone stays silent, but Luther, if you're listening, we await your calls. So you're looking at positions here now, you know, Wilkinson, do you think he'll stay, or do you think he'll go? Because, you know, you get this situation where a player, you want him to do a job, and, you know, I think it's pretty common knowledge that sometimes he doesn't want to play in as a centre forward. Now, you might want him up there.
To be quite honest, I think the last couple of games that he played through the middle, we looked a handful. Yeah. And to me, I don't... I think someone made the comment in midweek. For the majority of games, he was probably one of our biggest threats. But it's hard to say this, but the other flip side of that is he probably was a detriment to the team, because you've got someone like Danny Johnson standing in the 6-yard box, and you've got a left-footed player playing out on the right that really has got no intention of crossing the football at all, that just wants to chop back inside and shoot. So if he plays down the middle and he's got the right attitude, then I'd have him in the building. But if he doesn't want to do that, I can't see Kenny Jackett playing 4-3-3. And then, so for me, I'm sure he's earning decent money. You know, can we go and get someone else? If it was down to me, you know, I'd like to keep him. But again, it all comes down to his attitude and where he wants to play. There's no doubt in the boy's ability. There's no doubt in that at all. But you know, I don't think that you can. You know, we're a Division 2 football team. I don't think you can accommodate people at that level. You know, it's not under 10s. You can't pick your position and your number and say, I'm taking the corners and the free kicks. You play where the manager tells you in the system that fits the football team.
Well, I think, you know, Kenny's known as, you know, he's a disciplinarian, isn't he? He wants people to do what he says. So, you know, I don't think it's going to suffer anything like that from people. I think, as you say, the situation has changed. There'll be so many players that be looking for clubs, etc., that, you know, it's not unreasonable to say that, you know, you'll play where I put you, you know, and if you don't want to, there's the door over there, you know, because you want everybody on board here, don't you? And I mean, how many players do you think we'll end up getting in?
Well, we need at least a dozen, I think.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah. Yeah. What we got now, 8 or 9 contracted? Mm. Yeah, then you're gonna look at a 20-odd man squad with a couple of those young pros. Mm. The thing with Wilkinson is I just don't think he likes that contact. I always thought with Wilkinson that if he had a good first 5 minutes, then he was on it. He's one of them players that if he had a good couple of first possessions and sort of people backed off him in the first 5 minutes, he had a good game. I think if the fullback really rattled into him in the first 5 minutes, then he kind of was indifferent. And I think that might be his problem, that he doesn't want to feel that contact, because there's no doubt about it, at times last year, obviously it come down to the system, but Danny Johnson's got some real rough treatment. Obviously he was up top on his own, Division 2, you know, he got some real smashings from centre-halves, and he probably doesn't want that contact. He'll probably want to, you know, if he does play down the middle, he'll probably want to, not a number 10, but he'll probably want to play off someone, because, you know, his game is shifting it 1 yard and shooting. So.
Well, Jamie, what have you got there? You've got a lot of notes in front of you.
I'm just going back through what our signings have been, well, this week really, and also the youth team, the resurgence of the youth system really. We've had three new lads, well, not new lads, but three lads signed new contracts, which is always good to see. It just shows that the youth system is alive and kicking. It could well be our best crop of youngsters for about 5 years, since the days of Al Zate and co. So that's always a big tick for me. It just shows the health of the football clubs getting to where we want it to be. I'm looking at some of the names that have come up. I think a couple of them have made their debut.
Yeah.
Salford, which was
I like
Matt Young.
Yeah.
Matt Young looked all right to me. Anthony Papadopoulos and Reece Byrne.
Yeah, so my input in all three of them is, as I said before, I was lucky enough to go into the training ground a couple of times last season. Dean Brill was full of praise for Byrne, the goalkeeper. Thinks he's going to be a real decent prospect. I know he had some injuries during his YT, and I think he's come back and looked really strong. I think the boy, Papadopoulos, I think was probably the standout performer for the youth team last year. I know he had... I think he got on the bench a couple of times and he was in the squad, but I think he had definitely some eye-catching performances for the youth team, and scored some good goals. The boy for the last one, Matt Young, I think we mentioned before we come on air that, you know, I think your game last year, the only one you see was Stortford. I remember watching the Stortford game, and he was the name that stood out for me. I think he was the best boy of that day, young centre midfielder. So it'll be good. It'll be good for them to, as I say, in the lower leagues, you're always going to have four or five kids around the squad that are first or second year pros making their way in a game. I think I've mentioned before, my son's in the academy, and you know, I watch the boys train on a Tuesday and Thursday, and there's a whole raft of good talent at the club, and it's I'd say testament to the academy staff that within a couple of years of that academy nearly going out of business, and they did lose a lot of good players to different Cat 1 and Cat 2 academies. I think it's a testament to the club and the staff there, that they've got some good boys. And I think, you know, regardless of what you say about Orient, if I look at myself as a parent, the reason why you're happy with your boy to come to a club like Orient is, you know, if you look at a Cat 1, for instance, academy, a Cat 1 academy is looking for the next Harry Kane. A Cat 3 academy, you're looking for five or six kids every year to progress through the age groups and then ultimately get them into the first team. And if you look at Orient over the last 5 or 6 years, you know, we've probably got 10 kids playing in the Championship or in their under 23s or in the Premier. You know, you've got Al Zate, you've got Karoma, you know Bond's come on and kicked on, you know, Dolby and then boys went to Watford. So, you know, a club like Orient is always going to give a child a springboard to, you know, get exposure and get in the first team. So as you say, it's good to see that the conveyor belt is still working, really.
Yeah, and it's still kind of evolving, really, because Ling's recruiting a new head of academy manager during the summer. Do you think we can actually make the step up to like a Cat 2?
I think Cat 2 comes down to facilities and having a dome and an extra staff. So I think that will, you know, I think when we heard Ken or what I've read, you know, some of that investment will go towards improving the training ground and, you know, bolstering staff. So you know, I think it's definitely something that they will move towards in the future. But for me, it's all about, you know, securing and improving the training facilities, or even getting a, seeing if we can get a training ground of our own. I think we had a discussion the other day, and as I say, the boys use Ive Farm, which is just round the corner from the ground. It's a great facility. It's just, obviously, it's a shame that it's not owned by the football club. But yeah, the boy who signed today, I think, has got a real chance. I know Ross was a very big fan of Jaden Sweeney. I think I said it on the first shows I was on. Was trying to get Jaden to go out on loan in Iceland, and I know that, you know, he's been in at Fulham and they were very impressed with him. So I think he's an old school defender, and obviously they've looked at it and probably weighed up that, you know, hopefully Brophy will resign. They've got cover there. Obviously, the lad Ogie has been out on loan at Aldershot, getting exposure to National League football. So, I think for us, it's only a positive that we continue to get youngsters through. And as I say, at the end of the day, you know, we're part of that production line. Either they get in the first team and save us money, and or they get in the first team and get exposure, and then, you know, that money, you know, keeps the football club solvent and keeps the academy going for years to come.
Yeah. I was just wondering, you know, if it came down to it, would you have any qualms about throwing Sweeney in for, as a first team starter?
I don't know. I would very much, I'd probably take the gamble that Kenny Jackett will want an experienced player in each position. And then the kids fill in the gaps. And that might be that, you know, even someone like Hector's not a starter, but he'll see time in and around, you know, substitutions and suspensions. As I say, my thoughts would be that Kenny Jackett will want an experienced 15, 16, and then fill the rest with either, you know, Premier League loanees and the kids that we've got. But, you know, it will come down to how they come back in pre-season and how they do in the friendlies. I'm sure in the friendlies, you know, that squad that we've got or trying to put together is probably not going to be finished come July. So, you know, if they go away, if they play them early friendlies, then I'm sure the kids are going to get a chance to press their case.
Okay. I know you're a big fan of Hector Kyprianou.
Yeah.
Whereabouts would you really like to see him play? Would you like to see him sit in front of the back four or just play a bit further on up?
I think he's better than that. I think he can play. I think he can play as an eight, and as I say, I think they'll play 4-4-2, so he can play as one of those two. And again, it'll come down to how he comes in pre-season and how he presses his claims. I'm a big fan of him. I think he'll be the one that gets a move. I will be honest and say I was a little bit disappointed how he finished the season. Yeah. I think his form was a little bit sketchy, but for a kid of his age and experience, it probably was a little bit unsettling that he had some games and then obviously got sent off. He went away with Cyprus, come back, there was a new manager, he wasn't in the team. So I'll cut him a little bit of slack, but to me, I think he's got all the tools to. I think he's better than saying that he's just got to sit in front of the back four, because I think he's got more to his game than that. But if they play a sitter, as I say, for me, he's better than Cisse Puelin simply because he's more mobile. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, you know, I'm not saying, you know, Cisse won't play any games, but for me, he's, to me, Cisse is a number eight that doesn't get around the pitch, because technically he's really good.
Yeah.
Like, on his day, he can get the team going. He's technically good. He's got a nice left foot. But for someone of his size and his stature, he's not someone that I would say is a stereotypical number four, because he doesn't really get about the pitch. He doesn't steam into tackles. He's not someone that's going to galvanise a football team. But, you know, I think he divides opinion. So I think other people see that, you know, he's a vital player for us. I'm I'm not a massive fan. I think there's a massive difference between the lad that we had on loan to the lad that played last year. And I know everyone says he's good in the dressing room, and he does seem a good lad, but to me, I just want a bit more mobility out of someone that plays centre midfield.
Yeah, I think looking at his physicality, everyone's expecting Patrick Vieira sort of dynamism. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to get that.
But you know, for me, I just think if Hector comes in and hits the ground running in pre-season, I just think that he's got more about him, regardless of his age and his experience. You know, he's going to make mistakes. He's going to maybe be indifferent. He's going to, at times where he does need to be pulled out of the team. But I would rather, naive of me to say, but I'd rather have that from a homegrown kid than someone that, you know, maybe he's in the last year of his contract and he's on the way down rather than the way up. Yeah. I'd rather, to me, play Hector. And, you know, as I say, to me, that's an academy kid that's saving us money. That's probably, you know, if he has two good seasons, then he's going to earn the club a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, going back to like homegrown talent, Dan Happy, where do you think he goes from here?
I think I said to you the other day, I think to me, Dan Happy has got the biggest season of his career coming up. I said I've been no secret to it. I honestly thought that Dan Happy would go to the Premier League or the Championship. You know, it might have been a couple of years ago to their 23s. I've always said I think the kid's a Rolls Royce. You know, he's probably far too good looking to be a centre half. But you know, he's got everything. You know, he's left footed, good size, can be physical. But for me, unfortunately, I think he probably had the worst season of his career last year. I'm not so sure that the expansive style of play and playing out from the back really suited him, which is strange because he's a footballing centre-half. But I think the emphasis on him bringing out and playing led to a lack of attitude and just being far too relaxed than he should have been. I mean, if Jackett's, you know, way of playing is to get it to him and take it on the back foot and, you know, get it into midfield quickly or hit a diag or whatever it might be, that might suit his game and pick him up a little bit more, because the time that he's been at the football club means that, you know, there's, you know, it's probably a £200,000-£250,000 compensation fee attached to him. I'm not so sure clubs off the back of last season are going to pay that. So if I was his agent, I'd be saying, you know, you need to sign a year or a 2 years, so you're and then a free agent, and then the emphasis is really on Dan Happ to have a really good season. He's definitely got all the tools to be a good centre half, a really good centre half. My problem with it is, for me, still making the same mistakes that he's making as a 17-year-old. His starting positions are sometimes not great. His distances are not great, which means at times he's a walking free kick. He gets far too tight to people and gets rolled. And maybe, you know, maybe watching it on the streams is not helped my viewing, but at times last year I thought he looked like he'd lost a yard of pace. So it's a big season for him. I think that he's got it in him. I hope he's got it in him, because I like him. Again, he's another homegrown kid, but he's definitely got to come back with the right attitude and kick on. Otherwise, he could be one of those that we talk about should have, could have.
Yeah. I mean, as a pairing, would you like kind of go with Thompson, or if we could get him Akinola?
I would really, really like to get Akinola. Purely and simply because I think I said it last time I was on. He doesn't look like a footballer. He doesn't look like, you know, if you looked at Happy and Akinola next to each other, you know, the old adage, he looks as a footballer and he doesn't, you know. But as a one-on-one defender, is unbelievable, you know. And you know, he had the odd game where he wasn't great. You know, people say Exeter was his fault and whatnot, but to me, that's just a young pro in the first year of playing week in, week out, that a manager like Kenny Jackett would think, you know what, you know, Akinola's played 10 games on the bounce, I need to bring him out now, give him a rest, reinvigorate him, and then put him back in. So for me, I would prefer Akinola to sign, but I think you need three good centre-halves anyway.
Yeah.
So for me, they would be a great three, because I really like Thompson when he came. If we're looking at our conversation at the start of the show about the spine of your team and having real winners, you could tell he was a winner. You could tell whether he didn't care whether he headed it, kicked it, kneed it. He just wanted to keep clean sheets and be a bit of a warrior. And I think, lower league football teams definitely need that. So they'll have to find a pairing. The great thing with Akinola is, regardless of who he plays alongside, his pace makes a massive difference. Yep. And his pace will get us out of trouble. So hopefully, I'm sure, as I say, I'd be very surprised if he hasn't got offers as well. Akinola, I think, as I say, good pedigree, coming out of West Ham, being under 23's captain or whatever it was, having a good, successful first loan spell, churning out the games. But I really, really liked him, and bottom line as well, he just seemed a nice kid.
Yeah.
And that's what you want from a football club like Leighton Orient. He just seemed a nice kid that wanted to come and play football and get his head down and do his best.
Yeah.
And that's as supporters, I think we mentioned it earlier, as a supporter, if a player's given everything that he's got, you'll suffer that all day long. It's when players seem to be going through the motions that as a fan, that's what ilks you the most. So for me, if you could sign Akinola, Hap signs an extension, Thompson will be back rare and fit, you've got a really good free there, a really good free, and you can chop and change as it sees fit. You might play Thompson away from home when your back's up against the wall and pairing with someone else, and you might play Danny Happ at home where the emphasis is on you and you've got to have the ball a little bit more. And you mix and match to suit your opposition or the way you want to play. But then it'll come down to the fullbacks. Obviously, we need to get a decent right back in.
Yeah.
And as I say about getting experience player for every position, but if he's got two left backs already, albeit they're both kids, one of those might play. Mm-hmm. And I suppose at the minute, Ogie will probably think himself that he's got the starting position above Sweeney purely and simply because he's gone to the National League and churned out performances from Evfleet. I do remember though that speaking to Ross a few years ago, and I remember seeing him at East Thurrock when he first came on, and given his size and the way that he plays, I think as he gets older that Shadrack Ogie will go to a left-sided centre-half rather than a left-back, purely and simply because of the size and reaction times and etc. So that'll be interesting to see his progression. But yeah, it'd be great if we could get Akinola in the building and Hap signs. But as I say, that'll come down to what he wants to do. As I say, if it was 2 years ago, I should imagine, and all the rumours that Dan Happ had a long line of suitors. I'm not so sure, even if, his last performance at Salford kind of typified his season, really.
Yeah.
A bit sloppy in possession, give away a penalty, looked a bit slow and languid, and he's got a big summer ahead of him.
Yeah, again, if you'd say something like Kenny Jackett coming in, he might file off the rough edges of his game.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
And it just might do him and a few others the world of good. It just might be the kick, like you said earlier, might be the kickstart everybody needs here, like a new slate, and let's get this division done in quick time. I just wanted to ask you about Dan Kemp. Where do you see his best position, and where do you think he's going to operate next season?
See, Dan Kemp will be an interesting one because, as I say, when he first came to the football club, I thought that he was a bit of a... Obviously, he came on, he had that cameo, didn't he? And he looked really, really good. Yeah. And then he had four or five games, and I thought, don't actually know where you can play this kid in Div 2. And it'll be an interesting one to see where, if he plays 4-4-2, where you're going to fit him in, because he's not an old school winger that's going to cross the ball. He's not he's not someone that's got blistering pace. So it'll be interesting whether you play him off someone like Danny Johnson, or you know, you do have to change the system to try and fit it in. It'll be hard to find a position, because in an old school 4-4-2, it would be like going back to when we had Cox and Adebayor. I suppose you got, if that was me, you'd maybe have two centre midfielders. You have Kemp on the left that can pretty much come in and join in and go and play, and you know, you then really emphasis is on your left back to get out on the outside and get crosses in and join in. But then you're not really, unless you've got a flyer on the right hand side, you're not really going to be able to get up the pitch. So for me, if he decides that he's a left midfielder, then as I say, you want to have an expansive fullback. You know, that might be Brophy that can, you know, go in and join in down the sides. And then for me, you'd want a real flyer down the right hand side. So if you need to go front to back quickly, then you can drop it in behind and get up the pitch. Otherwise, I just feel like otherwise we're going to be very easy to defend against. Mm-hmm. So, but he definitely proved his worth. Don't get me wrong. I think he had some really, really good games. I like the fact that he's a trier as well. We get stuck in. So it depends who you sign as a centre forward, because he could probably play as a 10 off a 10. Yeah. But again, you'd probably be licking your lips, as you know, if you played Royce Soteri up top, for instance, and Dan Kemp off him. You know, if you've got two lower leagues 6'4" centre halves, you're probably thinking, you know, all right, you might have to run behind every now and then for Soteri, but you're thinking, you know, you're going to get tighter and try and go through people. So it's a tough one. He might be the super sub maybe, but it will come down to, I suppose, how he wants to play. For me, I can't see anything other than 4-4-2. So for me, it'll be who they get in as a wide fullback and who they can get in as a winger. There's talk about, I saw in a paper about Adebayor coming back. Yeah. So I know he's now a fullback, and you know, Father Time maybe he's caught up with him a little bit in his career with injuries and whatnot. But you know, that old partnership of Cox coming in and joining in and playing it to the front man and getting it back, and you know, making a free in the centre midfield if he had to, and you know, we had someone go down the left hand side, that would be perfect if we can get a flyer on the right.
Well, I just apologise to anybody waiting for Luther Blissett to ring in, which we had all set up for 7:15. For whatever reason, it's not happened. And whether Luther's held up or whether he's been asked not to do it, who knows? Who knows? But we shall move on. We're very professional there. You were, Christian. Keep the show going. But nothing phases us in the end on this show, does it? We've had about 230-odd shows, and we've never had a guest not turn up or show or phone in, but it's the first time for everything, and it may be a bona fide reason why he couldn't, and we'll have to accept it didn't happen for whatever reason.
Maybe he's got some dirt on Kenny Chesney.
I don't know about that. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, we've been quite up with the news, haven't we, regards the club, a few firsts over the last few weeks. But yeah. There you go. So a bit of egg on the face tonight for us, perhaps. There we go. So we'll call it one all, shall we?
Yeah.
Let's have a look at investment-wise. Now, the club issued quite a lengthy statement here, and I'm going to try and read my way through this, and I'll be absolutely honest with you. I've got top-quality equipment here. I've got a mobile phone that I accidentally dropped face down onto some cobbled stones, and so it's, I'm trying to read this through a spider's web. Would you believe? Where are we? Yes, Leighton Orient has recently undertaken a drive to source new investment which aimed to secure funding for the next several years, improve the club's infrastructure and allow the club to compete better both on and off the pitch. Now, the offering for new shares in Eagle Investments 2017 Limited, the club's majority shareholder, was oversubscribed. We are delighted to announce that two of the new investors will join the club's board of directors and also the board of Eagle. They are Coley Parry, who's a founder and CEO of the Common Group, a venture capital platform that invests in early and mid-stage companies across multiple sectors in the US and UK. Nick Samarka, an experienced business leader and strategist. Nick has nearly 20 years of experience at the international consulting firm McKinsey & Company. Since his retirement, Nick has become an active investor in a number of startups and also in a minor league baseball team in the US. Other new significant investors, James Fenton, Joe Cagini, Kevin Willer, Jason Bain and Jeff Devron will bring varied business expertise and experience to the club. In addition, Rich Emmett and Nigel Travis have increased their investment in Eagle. In order to facilitate these transactions, Kent Teague has cancelled just over 2 million of his shares in Eagle. To transfer the full benefit of his generosity to Leighton Orient, on equivalent amount has been written off of the loan balance due to the football club to Eagle. Kent remains a substantial shareholder and vice chairman and stays fully involved in the future development of the club. It's nearly 4 years since the acquisition of the club by Eagle, and given recent events in the game, it is both worth reiterating the Leighton Orient board's commitment to community, transparency and a recognition of the club's 140-year history in East London. Chairman Nigel Travis commented, "As a personal investor in the new round of funding, these are very exciting developments for Leighton Orient and want to thank my great partner Kent for his generosity and good counsel. We are both very pleased to welcome our new board members and other investors and expect Leighton Orient to be even more competitive in the years to come, including the promotion in the near future. We know all the new investors are all excited about Leighton Orient's future." Now, as a means of introducing these new investors to you, the club are holding a question and answer session on Friday on YouTube channel at 6 p.m. So should be an interesting one, that, Jamie.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it will mean Harry Kane's on our shop being this low. I've got a funny feeling. But it's good. Everyone knows that football struggled over the last 18 months. Finance in general has been good at this club. I mean, we've done really well to get through it as we did. I think Nigel made that very, very clear at the AGM. It will certainly maintain our top seven budget, and that's just what we need. Now we've got a League One manager to hopefully get us there. And also it will attract the sort of players that we like to sign. You know, the big marquee signings, hopefully, you know, or at least keep our squad competitive. So, yeah, it's good news for us. Obviously, we don't know too much about them, but the thing is, they're building up an asset at this club at the moment, aren't they? We're investing in the new East Stand refurbishment. There's a new pitch on the horizon somewhere down the line. We're upgrading our facilities all the time. You know, we're looking to invest in the women's team and our youth academy. So it's all good news, really, and I think it puts us in a decent position, probably a lot better than a lot of other clubs at the moment. They're still counting the pennies. I think it's going to shore us up financially for the next 5 years. If you saw the AGM, they were talking about the five-year plan. You know, we've got big plans for this club, and it's just nice to know that the finance is in place, that whatever happens, because we don't know what's going to happen with COVID. We might not be back in we're all very upbeat at the moment, and we're right to be that, but we don't know if we're going back to the grounds for certain, do we? I mean, COVID's ran the game basically for the last year, so it's just reassuring to know that the finance is there to get us through whatever happens.
Yeah, Christian?
No, I echo that, really. I think in current times to think that we're still attracting new owners and new investment is kind of a testament to the football club and the job that the owners have done and the standing of the football club. I think also as well, I think that there might be a rise of the football club in the next couple of years. I think, we spoke a couple of weeks ago, whenever it was, about the Super League. I think there'll be more and more disgruntled supporters next season that are going to come and try Leighton Orient, and I think it could be again the start of a new dawn. You know, new manager, new supporters turning up. I was actually at the ground on Saturday, and the development across the road is growing. So I think someone said that's another 750 homes that are going to be opposite the ground. So I think it's all about, I think we spoke about it, I think it's, especially in the lower leagues, it's all about momentum, and hopefully that these new guys coming in will allow us to, maybe, you know, new manager starting a new momentum and try and push us back up the leagues, because as I say, there's a massive, I wouldn't say a massive football club, but there's a football club there with huge potential, I think.
Yeah,
I think
certainly be a medium football club. I think,
yeah.
I think, you know, if you say this small, medium, large, I think Orient could be a medium size.
But there's a massive opportunity. Yeah. There's a massive huge opportunity. There's more disgruntled football supporters than ever.
Yeah.
There's new investment.
Do you think, though, Chris, sorry, kind of crossed you, is that despite the new investment, do we need, I mean, let's take it that, you know, in the next, we won't jump the gun, but let's say in the next 24 months we're going to be leaving this division the right way,
mm-hmm.
And we've gone up. Do you think that we need the Championship to literally implode, you know, money-wise, before we consider going into it? Because at the moment it's a business model that's doomed to failure, isn't it?
But then, I agree with you, and the whole COVID, I was hoping, would blow football up a little bit and press the reset button.
Mm.
But then to chuck a curveball to that, look at what Barnsley are doing. All right, they're probably, they're not going to go up. They haven't won it. But there's opportunity there still for football, that if you can get on a roll and momentum and be organised, you know, who's to say that you can't get up the league, you know. And I think the problem would be for me more that if we did get on a roll and get up the leagues, then Brisbane Road wouldn't be suitable for higher up football. I think, you know, Brisbane Road totally suits, and I love Brisbane Road, but Brisbane Road totally suits Division 2 and Division 1 football. Yeah. But then after that,
you could be going back to what Barry Hearn's plan was, which is to share the Olympic Stadium.
Well, you've got a problem on your hands.
Yeah,
because,
but it's a good problem to have.
Of course, it is, and that's probably a long way off. But yeah. I think for the time being, it's all about new investment, getting our own training ground, continue to improve the facilities that we got, and more than that, get a team and a manager that's competitive and good enough to get out of Division 2 and then see if you can kick on again.
Right, well, thank you, gentlemen, for your input tonight. Sorry we didn't get Luther Blissett. As I say, it's the first time. Let's hope Luther's okay and nothing untoward's happened and he's not broken down or anything, but we'll try and get him on a future show. We can only apologise for that. First time it's ever happened, but your professionalism shone through, gentlemen. You let nothing faze either of you, and thank you for joining us. We'll be back next week, and we'll have details of the quiz that will be coming up shortly, and lots more besides. So do join us next week, 7 p.m. here on Phoenix 98 FM.
It's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. This is St. Arthur's Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane.
That's a wrong postcode in eyes. At the bridge, this is a 10. And you go, we're rocking all over the world again. So come on, Oriel, it's our past four. I'll stay till the end if I thought you'd score. But I haven't seen a goal.
On the hour, across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM News.